We've said in Revelation 9, John divides the chapter into two distinct sections. In the first half of the chapter, there is an emphasis on if you want to live the non-Christian life, there are going to be some consequences. You're going to face what kinds of consequences? You're going to face some physical consequences. Well, if physical consequences for the unsaved are the first emphasis in Revelation 9, then the balance of Revelation 9 should say if you want to live the unsaved life, you're also going to suffer some spiritual consequences. So first physical, then some of the spiritual issues that people face. And John began this chapter with the star falling from heaven, and there are the locusts, the symbol that that's designed to go ahead and talk about the forces of evil, talked about the scorpions. And then at the end of verse 4, he talks about how these things, these forces, these terrible problems come upon those that don't have the seal of God. We left off last week with Revelation 9, verse 13. This is, of course, the sixth trumpet. And we'll pick up where we left off. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the horns of the golden altar, which is before God. Now, we mentioned before that we've seen this altar before. Or at least we've seen a reference to an altar before. We saw a reference to an altar back there in Revelation chapter 6. And if you remember verses 9 and 10, there are their souls under the altar. They're crying out. They've been martyred for the faith. And they're crying out, how long, O Lord, how long before you punish the people who have taken our lives? How long before you take care of the people that need to be dealt with in life? And then in the previous chapter, Revelation chapter 8, Revelation 8 verses really 1 through 3, he talks about the seventh seal that, of course, was the first symbol. They have the seals, and then you have the seven trumpets, and then you have the seven plagues. We're now in with the trumpets. But when he talks about that seventh seal, you have there some information about the altar once again. I want to go back and run an Old Testament reference because I think this kind of helps clue us in as far as what's taking place. Exodus 29, verse 12. Exodus 29, verse 12. Somebody want to volunteer to pick that reference up for us? Okay, Steve, take your hand, and then Lois, we'll ask you to read the next one once we get down a little later in the class. Exodus 29, verse 12.
And thou shalt take of the blood of the bullock and put it upon the horns of the altar with thy finger, and thou shalt pour out all the blood at the base of the altar.
Okay, horns, altar, Exodus 29, 12. Over here in Revelation chapter 9, an altar and horns. We've said repeatedly that John often draws from the Old Testament as far as imagery to make points that deal with New Testament passages and principles and truths. Now, if we think about the Old Testament imagery in Exodus 29, and we apply that to Revelation, we've got what item back there with the horns? What's being put on the horns of the altar? Blood. What kind of blood? All right, animal blood. Well, we're not with the New Testament under a system where we use animals, but we're still dealing with blood as far as this altar. Remember the imagery back there in Revelation chapter 6? Who's under the altar? The martyrs, the people who have been slain for the faith. You think some bloodshed was involved in that? I think so. So when you think about the horns of the altar using that Old Testament imagery, the image, I think, is you've got blood on these horns. And where's that blood coming from? All right, it's coming from the people who have been killed. The persecutors are the ones who are responsible. Now, you think about that in lieu of what we're talking about. First half of the chapter, Revelation chapter 9, if you do some things that are bad, you're going to suffer physically. But now, beginning with Revelation 9:13, if you do some things that are contrary to God, what are you going to destroy? You're going to destroy your spiritual part. What about the guy that's out, or the woman? What about the person who's out destroying God's people? You think that's going to do something to their spiritual psyche? It's going to do some serious, serious damage. So John picks up on this particular idea here. And he's making really two points. When we get to the seventh trumpet, and we said before, the seventh seal, the seventh trumpet, and the seventh plague, all three of these items will describe things that will take place after the Lord returns. But as we think about this particular seal, number six, John is saying, okay, if you want to go out and you want to hurt God's people, yes, you're going to face punishment for that in eternity. If you're going to be a persecutor, you're going to have to pay an eternal consequence for that, unless you're like Paul and you choose to become a Christian and be, you know, cleansed from the sins. But he says, before eternity comes in this life, you think you're also going to suffer? You think you're going to pay for harassing and persecuting and killing God's people? That's the message. of the sixth trumpet. If you want to engage in this kind of activity, do not expect God to sit by idly while you destroy his people. He will do some things in your life that are not favorable. Scott, did you have a thought or him? Okay. All right. Got the Revelation 9:13 reference with Exodus 29, verse 12. Let's see if there's anything else I wanted to mention. Let's jump ahead a little bit to verses 20 and 21, the end of the chapter. I want to tie this together as well. And he says, "And the rest of mankind, who were not killed with these plagues, repented not of their works or their hands, that they should not worship demons and their idols of gold and silver and of brass and of stone and of wood, which can neither see nor hear nor walk. And they repented not of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, nor of their thefts." Now he mentions some bad stuff at the end of Revelation 9. You think these sins also would have a negative impact on a person's spiritual life? They are. And these things are bad. But as bad as these things are, and I know it becomes a little difficult to rank sin, but as bad as these things are, theft, murder, and that's not necessarily the murder of God's people, or the persecution of God's people, theft, murder, idol worship, fornication, as bad as these things are, might there be something that's worse? Bad enough to be an idol worshiper. But when you go out and you start killing God's people, you've not just crossed the line. You've gone well beyond it. So once again, Revelation 9:13 gives us a good introduction to what is being described in this chapter. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with verses 14 and 15 of Revelation 9? All right. Verse 14 says, again, before God, one saying to the sixth angel that had the trumpet, "Loose the four angels that are bound at the great river Euphrates." And the four angels were loosed that had been prepared for the hour and day and month and year, that they should kill the third part of men. Before we get involved with this, let's go back and think about what we said before. The fourth part of man. We saw this expression earlier in the book of Revelation. Remember what the fourth part of man represents? All right, the physical part. You know, our fleshly body. All right, if that's what the fourth part of man represents, then as we've said in multiple classes, the third part of man stands for our spiritual part. So as we try to interpret verses 14 and 15, we need to realize that we are talking about the spiritual part of man. Another thing that will help us from our preceding class, we've talked about Bible numerology. And you remember when it comes to the number four, what that's often associated with in the New Testament? Man and his world. We've got four directions, don't we? North, south, east, west. How many seasons do we have? Four. So as we see this number four, there's likely some symbolical significance to it. We have how many angels? We've got four angels. And John says these angels are bound where? All right, at the great river Euphrates. And then in verse 15 it says these four angels, and I do not think that these four angels are the same ones as mentioned in Revelation 7, verse 1. It says these four angels, they're loosed. They're allowed to go free. And what's their mission? They're going to destroy the third part of man, which is man's spiritual part. How do you think they're going to do that? You think it's going to be a miracle? No? How does God destroy, or how does the devil, or how does God permit the third part, the spiritual part of man, to be destroyed today? What does it? It's sin. And if people want to persist in sin, it's going to do them in. People can reach a point where they are so hardened, where they are so messed up by sin, that they're basically beyond repair. So as we think about these four angels, I like to compare them to military generals. Here are four generals, if you will, for sin. Four generals for the devil. One of the things that's interesting about these creatures, as you look at verse 15, do you see the word prepared? And the four angels were loose that had been prepared. God had arranged somehow for these creatures. The fact that these creatures are bound would indicate what to us? God says, "I've prepared them." In other words, even in life sometimes, a parent may say to a child, "This is not a good thing. And if you make this choice, it's going to be a bad thing. But you've come to a time in life where you're old enough to make your own decisions. And if you go down this road, this is what you're going to face. From me or from someone else." You think God does that to people? God warns us. He gives us all kinds of guidance. But God says, if this is what you want, if you want idol worship, you can have it. You want to be a thief? God says, I'll let you do it. And God not only says, I'll let you do it, I've got, if you will, figuratively speaking, four generals, four creatures that have been prepared that are going to be sources of evil that I'm going to permit to work in the world so you can go ahead and get what you want. Well, if God's willing to open up the door to evil, if you will, in that particular case, he says, okay, if this is what you want, I'm going to give it. You think Satan and his helpers are going to take advantage of that? They're not going to hold back. The devil and his sources, they're going to come out with everything that they have to try to deal with folks. Now, if you skip back a little bit to the beginning of the chapter, verses 4 and 5, let's go back and reread these verses. And it was said unto them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth. Remember who the grass of the earth represents? Christians, God's people. Neither any green thing, also a reference to God's people, neither any tree, strong Christians, but only such men as have not the seal of God on their foreheads. And it was given them, notice verse 5, that they should not kill them. So back in verses 4 and 5, when we're dealing with the physical things, it's kind of like Job. You can make them suffer, and the unsaved do suffer in many ways because of sin. We talked about the crisis lines and all the help centers and so forth. But back there in 4 and 5, you know, Satan, you don't have power over their life. But now as we get here to verses 14 and 15, what's said about the killing? Look at the end of verse 15. He talks about the day, the month, the year, that they should do what? Slay or kill. Now we are talking about killing them. But that's why you have to differentiate. In the first part of the chapter, we're talking about the physical part of man. In the latter part of the chapter, we're talking about the spiritual part of people. Bonnie?
Doesn't it say to slay the third part of man?
Yes.
So they're not literally going to destroy the body. They're just going to, the spiritual side.
Yes. And you think about what happens when a person gets deeper and deeper into sin. Finally, the muck of sin that just pulls them down so far, so fully, that it's almost impossible to bring them back. People oftentimes have turned to Hebrews 6 to talk about the point of no return. You can use that passage, but I think here is probably a better reference. More complicated reference, and a lot of people would say, well, I'm not quite sure about that. But as you sort through the chapter, this is exactly what John is talking about. Anything that you want to add or ask before we go on to a couple more things? Okay, John talks about a river in verses 14 and 15. Which river is he talking about?
The
Euphrates River. Now, when we see things like this in the book of Revelation, the first thing that should come to mind is this is probably a symbol. So what does it symbolize? Well, as with just about any symbol in the book of Revelation, you're going to find a lot of different ideas. And many times some of the ideas that you'll come across would be a literal interpretation. As with most of the other classes that we've had, I do not believe that a literal interpretation is here. But sometimes people think, well, there's going to be the literal Euphrates River, and there really is a Euphrates, and it's going to at some point dry up, and the land of Israel is going to be invaded from the east. People will come from countries like China, Japan, and India, and so forth. Well, I don't think a literal interpretation is correct. Because as you head on to the next verse, verse 16, notice this. And the number of the armies of the horsemen was twice 10,000 times 10,000. Anybody know how many that is?
It's 200 million.
All right, that makes it easy. 200 million. I'll mention this again. Anybody know what the population of the U.S. is, roughly?
19 million.
The last count that I had, if it was right, was about 300 million. So you're dealing with two-thirds of the U.S. population with the figure here. Now that's a lot of folks to put in a small, you know, a small amount of land, which we'll break down. So it just doesn't make sense as we start talking about the space that the people have and the number of folks. So verse 16 kind of clues us into the fact that, you know, we're not going to deal with 200 million literal horsemen. In fact, if that were literal, I'll go ahead and give that to you now. Imagine a section of land that is a mile wide and 200 miles long. A mile wide and 200 miles long. That's the area, the acreage that you would need to put in 200 million people on horses. And if you did that, each horseman would have an area that was 4 feet wide by 8 feet long. Then too, can you imagine this? 200 million, let's just put it in terms of people, two-thirds of the United States. But 200 million horsemen 200 million riders. Can you imagine what it would take as far as food and water every day? There's no way that that could be literal. So as we're dealing with figurative information in the next verse, after 14 and 15, verse 16 is obviously figurative. Verses 14 and 15, I believe we have to understand this in a figurative way. All right, the Euphrates. That's not a river that we talk about a lot, but if you go back and you do a little reading about rivers, you'll find that the Euphrates is one of the most famous rivers. It's famous like the Amazon, it's famous like the Nile, or a little closer to home, the Mississippi. If you go back in the Bible, you find some interesting things said about the Euphrates River. For example, it is in Deuteronomy 11, verse 24, simply called the river. But in Joshua 1, verse 4, it's called the great river. And then other passages like Old Testament verses, Isaiah 7:20, Isaiah 8, verse 7, you see that it was a boundary river. You have on this side, well, depending on how you look at the map, I guess for you it would be on this side, on the right side. There would be countries like Babylon, Assyria, and especially for Rome. You've got Rome here, and this river would have separated Rome from the worst aggressor in their day and time, the Parthenian Empire. And for them, the river was a nice, nice barrier. Now, if you are John, and you're writing this, and you're writing this to people who were familiar with Rome, and they're thinking about this river, and this river serves as a dividing line. It serves as a barrier. That would have been, I think, originally how the symbol was understood. You know, there are folks on this side of the river, and there are the people under Roman control, and we're on this side of the river. All right, now, if that's the meaning that John was picking up from that particular river, and it was a big, it was a noticeable, a significant dividing line, if that's how the people in John's day would have understood it, and John's writing this stuff to help Christians understand some spiritual truths, what do you think they would have been thinking? There's a dividing line. There's some folks on this side of the river, and there's some folks on this side of the river. True in Christianity? We've got people on two sides of the fence, don't we? We've got the unrighteous, and we've also got the righteous. So when John uses this particular figure, my understanding is that it is a way to say that there is this separation, there is this dividing line between the saved and the lost. Now let's connect that with what we just learned. There are four who? Angels, like four generals. And these angels, these generals of sin, have been bound. They've been prepared for something. Who have they been prepared for? The folks on this side of the river or the folks on this side of the river? Not these folks. Over here we've got the saved, don't we? So John's saying, hey, if you want to persist in sin, guess what? If you want to be on this side of the river, we've got some folks that are going to show up. And they're going to kill. They're going to slay. They're going to destroy what part? They're going to destroy your spiritual part. The forces of sin are out there. The forces of sin will actually go ahead and do you in, if you will. So another, I think, thing to advance this interpretation, especially as you look at verse 15 and you move down to about verses 20 and 21 concerning the end of the chapter, and the rest of mankind who were not killed by these plagues. Even as you kind of get into the spirit of the chapter, you can see a little bit about what John is saying. God allows the sins that exist in the world, the plagues, and as we continue to read, you kind of get a hint of what these plagues are designed to do. The spiritual side of man, it wasn't destroyed by sin, but what was the reaction of the people? They failed to repent. They didn't repent of the works of their hands, that they should not worship demons. They continued with the false worship. They had the various idols and so forth, and still were involved with things like murder and sorcery, fornication, and theft. Let's look at a couple cross-references. I've said before that John, as we look at the book of Revelation, a lot of this book is simply a restatement of information we find elsewhere in the New Testament. Now, John words his point sometimes very graphically. Sometimes you really have to sort through the symbolism, but a lot of it is just a restatement of material we find elsewhere in the New Testament. Romans 1, verse 28, you have a minute to get there. Romans 1, verse 28. Lois, do you want to take that? And then we'll also pick up from 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 11 and 12. We do not often use 2 Thessalonians 2, but in my mind, it is a perfect and complementary verse for what we have here in Revelation 9. 2 Thessalonians 2, 11 and 12. All right, Betty. Lois, if you're ready, let's look at Romans chapter 1, verse 29.
Being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips. Right verse?
Was that 28?
No, you said 29.
Okay. All right.
First you said 28, and then you changed it.
Oh, okay. Well, 29 is helpful, too. So if you bear in mind that she read, let's also pick up 28.
Okay. And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things which are not proper.
Okay, great. I'm going to make an extra note to have 29 in there, too. Okay. Now, you have all those sins in 29. Sin, 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 sin. And then when you back up, you have what statement? God gave them up. Now, for a lot of people, I think, well, I have a hard time with that. People would say, I just can't believe God would give them up. Well, that's what God said.
Well, you can't stay in sin.
That's right. And he wants people to be saved. But if a person says, I just love the mud pit so much, and that's where I'm going to live, that's where I'm going to stay, and the person refuses to come in and get clean, God says, okay, I've got four generals. Not literally, but I've got sufficient forces out there in the world, wherever you are in the globe. If you want to pursue sin, if you want to be on that side of the river Euphrates, God says, I'll let the devil have you. I'll let you enjoy sin as fully as you want. Now, looking at what we've said thus far in view of our next passage, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. Second Thessalonians 2, 11 and 12, when you're ready, Betty.
I keep turning the pages.
Okay, that's all right.
Second Thessalonians 2, 11 and 12.
Uh-huh.
And for this reason, God will send them strong delusions, that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned, who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness.
All right. A lot of people struggle with this passage, too. But if we look at it from the vantage point of Revelation 9, it becomes a little easier. Here are people, they have pleasure in what? Unrighteousness. Here are the people who want sin. Here are the people who live for sin. And God says, if that's what you want, I've got my four generals. And through them, what am I going to give you? I'm going to send you not only a delusion, I'm going to send you a strong delusion. See it in the text? God says, if this is what you want for Christmas and the other 364 days of the year, I will give it to you. Why? Because you have free will. Does it hurt me? Yes. Is it contrary to my will? Yes. But I've given you free will, freedom of choice. And I will let you wallow in sin to the fullest degree. And the devil's going to be there to help you every step of the way. If a person makes that choice, what is that going to do to him spiritually? It's going to kill them. Well, guess what we find about the four generals? It was given to them to destroy the fourth or the third part of man. That fourth part, they're still going to have that physical body, but the third part is destroyed. So John, as he deals with trumpet six, he is blowing this trumpet and saying, watch out, especially for the unsaved. If you become involved with sin, you can reach a point of no return in your life. Anybody ever see that happen with somebody? They're just so far down in the pit of sin. You know? It almost seems a little bit like Cain and Abel. God came down and talked to him. How well did Cain respond? Remember what God said to him? Sin's crouching at the door. It's not very far before you're going to be locked into this way of life. So, buddy, you better listen up. And you better get out of the mindset of the relationship that you're in. I've got one more thing to say before we pick up with 16 through 18, anything that you want to add or ask. Okay, let's look at this other expression that we didn't deal with thus far. The sixth angel, he's got the trumpet, the forces have been loosed, and again, this is going throughout the Christian age, the four angels were loosed that had been prepared, and then we have this expression, the hour, day, and month of the year. And it was at that time that the third part, the spiritual part of man, has been killed. Well, looking at what we've said thus far, how would you understand this day, this month, this year? When a person first becomes involved with sin, let's say it's today, spiritual part of their being still alive? Sure. But as that process continues, what do we finally reach? We reach a year. We reach a month. We reach a day. and we reach an hour. Well, what's happened to the person? It's just, you know, if you think about a battery, it wears down and wears down and wears down, and finally it shows zero on the meter. There's nothing left. And that's what happens as far as sin eating away. So it is a great principle. It applies individually and even with nations. You can see that righteousness, Sodom and Gomorrah, would be a good example. So there comes a time where God determines, and we're not God, obviously, so we don't know exactly what that criteria is, and sometimes we have a difficult time thinking we'll write somebody off. I learned recently about a man. He's got to be in his upper 80s now. I studied with him more than 20 years ago, talked to him at various times, always friendly, but he had experienced some things in his life that he blamed God for, and I thought the guy was hopeless. I mean, I wrote him off. His wife, who was a faithful Christian, died. There was another widow in the congregation. I mean, she's not romantically interested in him, but she reached out to him and, you know, had a little sit down and let's come to Jesus talk. And, hey, you know, time is short. You're old. I'm old. We don't have much time left, and you need to go ahead and make sure that you're in the right relationship with God. Whatever you think he's done as far as wronging you, get over it. And the guy has come back and righted his relationship with God. Probably go to heaven because of this widow. Now, from my perspective, I wrote the guy off. I thought he was just, and I mean, he didn't go off into sin as far as, you know, the drinking and, you know, all the other stuff that we would find in the scriptures. But in my mind, he was gone. But the day, the hour, the minute hadn't come for him. So sometimes we'll make some judgments one way or the other will not be right, but there does come this particular time. Once again, anything that went out of rest, Scott, and then we'll see who else has hand. You said reaping?
Yes, I
think you have to include two things in the reaping. There would be the initial reaping, that is a person who's becoming a Christian, and then there would also be that reaping in the sense of reclaiming the lost. So that principle to me would have to include both, Scott. I think the primary emphasis would be on the first pass, if you will, trying to get people to become Christians, but also the other, to reclaim the lost. And a Bible passage that you could use for that would be Luke 15. Remember the man who had 100 sheep? He left the 99 back home so he could go out and search the lost and then the lost son as well. So yes, both biblically would have to be included there. Bonnie?
I knew a man and his wife was a Christian. They had children and they all, he wasn't a Christian, but their children all became Christians. He went to church with them all the time. Years and years, and he's 80 years old or whatever. He was about 80, I imagine. Never ever obeyed the gospel, but never missed a service, unless it was, you know, he was sick or something. But never, all those years, sat there and never obeyed the gospel.
Yeah. Well, God really is a sifter of hearts, as far as trying to figure out, you know, how long a person might need before he obeys, and in some cases, he would know that. Some people are never going to obey, even though they would seem to be very, very close. But when we sing songs about this is my Father's world, God really does pay close attention to the world. As far as sifting hearts, and you know, I think sometimes lose that focus or don't think about that very much. But he is, individually, every person that's alive, from birth until death, looking at them, watching things. And in the case, I think you can relate that to, for example, Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. He said, ask, seek, knock, and you're going to find. So he knows what's in the heart. And if people are asking, if they're seeking, if they're knocking for sin, you think they're going to find that? Four generals over there are going to make sure that you not only get to that side of the Euphrates, but you're going to stay on that side of the line. Okay, let's now pick up with the next few verses, 16 through 18. And the number of the armies of the horsemen was twice, 10,000 times 10,000. I heard the number of them, and thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them having breastplates as of fire, and of hakim, and of brimstone, and the heads of the horses are the heads of lions, and out of their mouths proceedeth fire and smoke and brimstone. But these three plagues was the third. By these three plagues was the third part of men killed, by the fire and the smoke and the brimstone, which proceedeth out of their mouths. Now, here is one of the passages in Revelation where a lot of people who have some wild ideas about the end time will turn and they'll say, well, this is what's going to happen. Maybe they'll put it at a particular day and time, or maybe they'll say this is going to describe the end of the world or something similar. But as we said, John's again and again describing things related to the Christian dispensation. This is not some kind of end of time event. What we have here in 16 through 18 really is similar to what we have back there in verse 7. If you back up a little bit, we talked about the locusts. These locusts were released out of this pit, and there was the nasty smell there. We've got the smoke. You see that in verse 2. When he opened the pit of the abyss, there went up a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace. The sun's darkened by reason of the smoke. So we talked about when we were there, Satan and his helpers, the truth is available. We need that truth. It's like light. It's like air to us. But the devil, he's out there trying to go ahead and keep people away from the truth, trying to keep people out of the spiritual light. And then in verse 7, he talked about the locusts. He says, the shapes were like the horses prepared for war. And upon their heads, crowns of gold, or like gold. Remember what we said the gold-like crowns were? The word like helps us. It looks like gold, but it's fool's gold, iron pyrite. So the devil has deceit as one of his great tactics. And then as far as these forces, he says, in addition to the crowns that were like gold, their faces were like men's faces. They had the hair of women, very attractive as far as what sin is often presented as. Their teeth, though, were like the teeth of lions. And then, especially there in verse 9, the breastplates of iron. Remember what we said about that iron? When you look at Satan and his forces, do they seem like they can be stomped out easily? No, they're very tough. It seems like when we look at the sins in our world, it seems like they are very, very powerful, and it's almost impossible to overcome them. So John used the fifth trumpet back there in verse 1 to say the unsaved were going to suffer the physical consequences for sin, and now, once again, we're dealing with the spiritual part of humanity. With these horsemen, we've already given the number. Lois's translation pointed out that it's 200 million. So when we think about this in terms of Satan and his helpers, if John describes the devil and his helpers as having a force of 200 million, what's that suggest about him? Satan's a toothless predator. He's tough. And his forces are very, very powerful. There is a lot of strength there. So if a person decides to head down the path of sin, not only are they, by their actions, endangering themselves, what kind of associates are out there saying, hey, we're ready to grab you? Can you think of about a force, a two-thirds the size of America, that's waiting to grab you and bring you, suck you in? It's not going to take much to go ahead and become involved with this kind of way of life. And the world, when we look at it, it's full of things that will absolutely decimate every part of a person's spiritual life. Can you think of some examples? Person just starts to play with the dark side a little bit. What kinds of things might suck him in? All right. Person, and I think the world sees that, do they not? I've never done it, but you go down to the casino, you think there's some places that'll let you play for free for a little while? Here's $20 for free. Here's $100 for free. Most of us, I think, have gotten in the email inbox that we use, free gambling ad at various times. The spammers are sending it out, play for free. Or, it's been a while since I've seen one of those and I've never clicked on it, but there's always that lure. And they wouldn't send that out unless it worked. What about something like cocaine? Try it once, and you're hooked. I mean, it's just instantly pull you down. What else? All right, pornography would be another one. People become involved with it, and it doesn't have to be much, and bang, they've got them. Anything else?
What?
All right. And, alcohol is a strange thing. I've talked to a lot of people, and maybe there's an exception out there, but everybody that I know of has said that they didn't enjoy their first drink. As far as the taste of it, it wasn't the taste that kept them going back. What was it? Well, okay. I think if you drink enough, you're going to go ahead and drink your troubles away. Sure. People think that it's going to calm the nerves. What's the other aspect of it?
The company,
the fellowship. Cheers, wasn't that the show which said everybody knows your name? Come down to happy hour, you've had a hard day, you can go ahead and share your woes and complain about your boss and everything else. Sucks people in. So what we see in life is reflected here very, very well.
Making television drinking so attractive.
Sure. And it goes back to, I think, what we had earlier in the chapter as far as...
It goes back to, even the Westerns, they always go in the saloon and have a drink. It's whiskey.
Yeah. And there you go back earlier in Revelation 9 with the women and the hair. Satan knows how to package sin. So whether it's Miss Kitty and Gunsmoke or whatever it is, the devil knows how to package sin. And people get far enough into it that he hooks them, and the forces are enough to keep them there for a long, long time. So just a sad but often true message. And then, too, as we think about this, our bodies. We have sometimes doctors that will deaden the nerves for folks. They would say, well, you've got a nerve problem, so let's deaden the nerve. You think sin does that to a person? After you get so far into something, people become spiritually insensitive. And we, especially in our day and time, did you see the story? I just glanced at it within the last 24 hours, had some other things going on. But there was a fellow who murdered his, I think it was his father, with an axe. Anybody see that story? I wish I would have read it a little bit more. But the, I believe it was his son. Dad was asleep. Murdered dad with an axe. And then when authorities came and caught him and talked to him about it, he was laughing. Ha ha ha! Yeah, killed dad with an axe. What about a person's spiritual sensitivity? What's happened in that case? Or, and we can go to a school shooting or workplace shooting. I mean, we can just, in our day and time, week after week, it's in the news. What's happened to people?
I think they cultivated that for a long time, and then all of a sudden they're callous.
Yeah, that's right. It's basically a spiritual callous. There's been that downward descent. And finally people get to a point where their conscience. Well, Paul talked about having a seared conscience, and that's what happens to people. There's nothing left, spiritually speaking. And, you know, in Romans 1, Paul talked about parents that have no natural love. Can you imagine a mom that kills her kids? We've seen it. We've seen multiple examples. Abortion, you know, you've got a living human being inside you. How can you go to the abortion clinic and say, destroy what's inside me? So once again, the point that John's making in Revelation 9, we see it on a practical level every single day in this country. Bonnie?
Domestic violence is very, very much like all of that. People, I've seen women that have, you know, been in that for so many years that I knew a woman that she just couldn't handle it anymore. And one night, her husband got real drunk and they were somewhere and she stopped the car on a dirt road and went around to the on the outside of the car and threw him out on that dirt, and he was so drunk, and she just drove the car over and over and over him till he was dead.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, there's so much desperation in a lot of, you know, people that stay in that situation. That domestic violence affects a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot.
And you see the same kind of thing. The story is repeated. Sometimes there'd be an ice pick. Or to be a knife. I mean, they just stab them 20 or 30 times. Or shoot them. You know, once or twice would be fine, but they fire 15, 18 shots into the body. So, sin does that. So, it's just sad. But society is replete, literally, with examples. Betty?
I think society, too, in this day and age with social media and everything, has desensitized to the fact of hearing about it, and it's like, oh well, another murder, and they just go, we go on, you know. And I think that's something that we as Christians need to guard against, to not become to the point that we think, oh well, it's just another murder, you know, we're hearing about it. It's like, you know, you need to stop and think about what is happening to society. But yet society has become so covered with it and so thrown in our face every day and all the time. I mean, even in movies, that's, you know, and so it just becomes the point that we just don't think about it that much anymore.
Yeah.
It
we're inundated with it. I mean, society is literally filled with it.
Yeah.
And then that goes back maybe to one of the things that Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are they that mourn.
Yeah.
Blessed are they that mourn over sin, is what he meant.
Yeah.
And certainly personal sin, but the point can be extended to their in the world as well, because if we don't have that, once again, Satan has a foothold in the life.
I think that some of that TV shows, they should never never be put out there. And it starts so young. Some of you in the cartoons, I say, are not even fit for children to watch. Because there's always that kind of violence. And I think it plants a seed in them already at a very young age.
Yeah, it does. And John, we'll take your hand in just a second, Scott, if there's something that you wanted to say. But I wanted to add to that. When you look at verse 17, the descriptions here, you have three different descriptions. You've got the fiery red, or the fire. You've got the dark blue, you've got the smoke, and then you've got the yellow, which would be like sulfur, brimstone. So as he's talking about these 200 million horsemen, and he uses these three very powerful colors, you've got the blue, you've got the yellow, and you've got the red, you can almost visualize that in a shield. So when you think about the forces of evil, very, very strong, very, very powerful, very, very captivating. And then he uses the description too, heads of lions. So when we think about the power of evil, the power of these four generals, if you will, lions are known for devouring their prey. So when we think about sin, it is extremely powerful. Scott, you had a hand? Okay. Then in verse 18, he talks about the plagues. And this word, of course, is a further illustration of how bad sin is. When we think about sin, the Bible compares it to a plague. You think about the plagues that have hit, AIDS, I guess, would perhaps be the best modern example of a plague. But they scare the fire out of people. People say, well, I don't want to be involved with that kind of plague. I want to make sure that I don't get sick from that kind of thing. So it takes a lot to destroy the spiritual life. First drink a person has that may not destroy the person's spiritual life, the first time they gamble, the first time they do this, that, or the other thing. But it does put them in a position where they expose themselves to the things that we've talked about. So John, he describes a necessary force here as fire, smoke, and brimstone coming from the mouths of forces that destroy the spiritual part of lives. Now that's good in this sense. If sin was able to basically strike us one time and then we're drug so far down in the pit, we can't get up, what would be true for everybody here? We wouldn't be here this morning, would we? So sin is something, it's got to strike you usually more than a few times. But if you allow yourself to be struck and struck and struck, every time you're struck, you're taken deeper down in the hole. And God says, hey, you need to make sure that you recognize the problem and you start, repenting, coming out of that. There's also, I think, a practical lesson here. If we're going to convert people, based on Revelation 9, when's the best time to reach them? I mean, any time is a good time, but when's the best time? You get them when they're young. Because the longer people live, the more ingrained they become in sin, the further they are down in the pit, generally speaking. And it's a lot harder to pull somebody up 100 feet than it is a foot.
Like red growing a little tree.
Exactly right. Yeah, you leave that in there for 10 or 15 years, or 50 years. Yeah, and it's going to be very, very difficult to go ahead and get that out. All right, then we have one other quick point that I want to make as far as the things coming out of the mouths of these creatures, the smoke, the fire, the brimstone. It also, to me, is suggestive of the fact that you've got Satan, a lot of the false teaching that he and his helpers try to disseminate throughout the world. Some of Satan's commonest lies in our day and time, what do you think some of them would be? All right.
You can live the way you want to, but as long as you love God.
That's right. As long as you love God, as long as you're a good person, there are many different paths to God. All of these things help reinforce, these horsemen and their great ministry for evil as we look at our world.